You know that moment you get a new smartphone and you're rushing through the setup process.
Oh, yeah, the Alice menus.
Right. You're blindly hitting next, accept, use default settings. I mean, nobody reads the fine print. You just assume the people who built the thing have your basic interests in mind.
Or at the very least, they aren't actively setting you up for disaster, right?
Exactly. But I mean, it is the path of least resistance.
Well, the human brain loves to conserve energy, so you just trust the default and move on to the shiny new interface.
But what if that default setting wasn't just like choosing your screen brightness or your notification sounds?
Right. What if it's something bigger?
Yeah. What if the default setting decided who gets to manipulate your face? Or, who gets to secretly listen in on your most vulnerable moments in a doctor's office?
That is a terrifying thought.
It really is. And I was reading the latest issue of Conversational AI Watch, the July 11th, 2026 edition, and it struck me that we are in the middle of this massive, invisible turf war.
Oh, absolutely.
Like from Apple suing OpenAI all the way down to military exam rooms, every single story this week hinges on one underlying question, and that is, who holds the default?
It really is the defining battleground of the year. I mean, we are looking at a landscape where the machine you talk to is stepping out of your web browser.
Yeah, it's getting real.
Exactly. It's getting a physical body, it's getting a workplace login, and it is pulling up a chair in your physical life.
Right.
And the central tension running through all these sources for this deep dive is whether anyone actually has to ask for your permission first, or if your data, your ideas, and your privacy are just up for grabs by default.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting right at the absolute top of the tech food chain.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Because Apple has a billion-dollar legal team to fight a default setting that allegedly steals its intellectual
They
property.
certainly do.
So on July 10th, they walked into a federal court in Northern California and sued OpenAI. And they did not mince words.
No, they didn't.
They claimed OpenAI's upcoming conversational device, which, is the big leap into dedicated AI hardware, is rotten to its core with stolen trade secrets.
And when you dig into the mechanics of the complaint, you see exactly how these trade secrets supposedly walk out the door.
It's wild.
It really is. The lawsuit names Cheng Liu, a former Apple senior systems electrical engineer. And after he left Apple to join OpenAI, the complaint alleges he kept a work-issued laptop.
Wait, he just kept it.
Allegedly, yes. And once inside OpenAI, he allegedly found a bug that allowed him to access Apple's cloud file storage.
So he just kept the digital back door propped open and walked right back in.
That is the exact allegation. Apple says he used that ongoing access to download dozens of highly confidential hardware files,
Like what kind of files?
unreleased product info, engineering presentations, proprietary project data. But the second individual named, Tang Tan, is where the story shifts from digital access to just sheer physical audacity.
Oh man, yeah, Tan's story is crazy.
Right. Tan spent about 24 years at Apple, eventually becoming the design lead for the iPhone and the Apple Watch. And he is now OpenAI's chief hardware officer.
And the allegations against Tan are wild. I'm reading this complaint, and Apple says Tan was directing job candidates who were still employed at Apple to bring actual parts to their OpenAI job interviews.
Yes, for what the complaint calls show and tell.
Like, it's like inviting a chef to a job interview and telling them to casually bring a thermos of their current restaurant's secret sauce. You just don't do
It's
that.
incredibly brazen.
And he also allegedly coached them on how to evade Apple's security protocols. And keep in mind, Jony Ive's design firm, IO Products, which OpenAI bought for $6.5 billion, is heavily implicated here, even though Ive himself isn't named.
The audacity of the alleged method is striking, but what is equally telling is OpenAI's response to this massive, highly detailed federal complaint.
Oh yeah, their PR team must have been sweating.
Well, they released exactly two sentences.
Unbelievable.
They stated they have no interest in other companies' trade secrets and are focused on building technology that empowers people.
They didn't even say the word Apple.
Completely omitted
I'm
on that.
looking at this and thinking if someone caught me red-handed telling candidates to smuggle out hardware, I'd be in full damage control mode. They just brushed it off.
Yeah, it's a very confident posture.
But there's a timing aspect to this lawsuit that we have to talk about
Yeah.
because Apple asked the judge right up front to preserve evidence.
Right.
And they filed this just one day after eight news organizations in Manhattan accused OpenAI of destroying evidence regarding how ChatGPT was trained.
What's fascinating here is the broader policy implication of that timing and really that lawsuit as a whole.
How so?
Well, we spend so much time wondering how government regulators are going to rein in these frontier AI labs. We talk about oversight boards and massive legislation.
Sure.
But right now, the most forceful, immediate challenge to OpenAI's hardware program isn't coming from a government agency. It is coming from a well-resourced rival tech giant.
Wow.
Apple has the billions of dollars required to force discovery, secure the evidence, and literally make a company answer for its defaults in court.
Which is a perfect pivot to the consumer side of things, actually.
Right, because everyday people don't have that power.
Exactly. Apple has a billion-dollar legal team to fight back. But what happens when the victim doesn't have a legal team? What happens when the default setting is aimed at your personal Instagram account?
That brings us to Meta's spectacular four-day retreat.
Spectacular is definitely a good word for it. Meta Superintelligence Labs launched a new feature on Tuesday called Muse Image.
Yes.
It was integrated into their chatbot, allowing users to generate and aggressively edit images. But the critical detail here, the raw material the AI used to train and execute these edits, was photos from public Instagram accounts.
Right. And the default setting for this was opt-out.
Which means, unless you proactively dug through your settings menus to find some buried toggle switch and said no, your face was raw material for anyone to manipulate.
Every product team in the world understands the math of opt-out defaults. I mean, most people never touch their settings.
Yeah, like we were saying earlier with the new phone setup.
Exactly. If you set the default to yes, you essentially guarantee universal adoption. You don't have to convince the user, you just rely on their inertia.
Right.
They made the baseline use, and they made consent the exception to the rule.
So if the math of opt-out defaults is so obvious to product teams, why did Meta risk launching a facial manipulation tool this way? Like, did they just bet nobody would notice?
Yeah.
Because this feature was completely dead by Friday. It lasted exactly 4 days.
They likely calculated that the friction of users complaining would outweigh the friction of them just opting out and moving on.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but what they miscalculated was the response of organized likeness.
Organized likeness.
Yeah, so unorganized likeness, the ordinary person with a public account just got a default setting they likely didn't even know existed. But organized likeness has unions.
Oh, Hollywood.
Exactly. SAG-AFTRA and the Creative Artists Agency, CAA, pushed back instantly. When you have a union card and a major talent agency behind you, you don't have to hunt for a settings menu.
Yeah, CAA can literally just get Meta executives on the phone.
Right. SAG-AFTRA publicly demanded a clear and conspicuous OPTIN, and because of that organized pressure, the tool was killed in 4 days.
And to make it even creepier, in that exact same 7-day window, the tech outlet 404 Media discovered a patent filed by Meta for a wearable device.
Oh, this one is wild.
It really is. This device supposedly reads your emotional state and even tracks your medication habits just by analyzing your sighs, your laughs, and the tone of your voice.
Yeah.
I mean, how does an AI know what medication I'm taking based on a sigh? That creeps me out.
It comes down to acoustic biomarkers.
Okay, what does that mean?
Basically, your respiratory patterns, the micro tremors in your vocal cords, the cadence of a laugh, these physical outputs change subtly based on your emotional state.
Okay.
And crucially, they change based on the physiological effects of certain pharmaceuticals.
Wait, really?
Yes. An AI trained on enough data can map those subtle acoustic shifts back to specific chemical influences in your body.
That is just...
It illustrates how aggressively the boundaries of personal data are being pushed when the default is set to take.
So they are borrowing your face on Tuesday and patenting a way to read the chemical makeup of your size by Friday.
Pretty much.
That's terrifying for adults. But if unorganized adults are vulnerable to these defaults, teenagers are even more exposed. And it seems like governments around the world are currently busy fencing off the completely wrong yard.
We are seeing a massive global wave of teen social media bans right now.
Yeah, Australia was first, right?
Australia became the first to enforce one, yeah. And now the UK, Spain, France, and various US states are following suit. But CNBC's Sada Pamia did a deep dive into these laws and found a glaring blind spot.
It's the blind spot.
They almost entirely miss AI chatbots.
This is wild to me.
Yeah.
Because Pew Research is reporting that roughly 50% of U.S. teens are already using chatbots like ChatGPT, Copilot, and Character.ai.
Exactly. Half of them.
And CNBC is pointing to a growing body of evidence showing teens using these bots as substitutes for real-life friendships. But I have to ask, how exactly does a chatbot harm a teen socially? I mean, it's just text on a screen, right?
Well, it has to do with the removal of social friction.
Social friction.
Yeah. When a teenager interacts with a human, they have to navigate disagreements, awkward pauses, reading body language, compromising.
Right, just normal growing up stuff.
Exactly. That friction builds vital cognitive and social pathways. But a companion bot is programmed to serve the user. It always agrees and never gets bored. It validates every single feeling.
Oh, I see.
The cognitive de-skilling happens because the teen's brain literally loses the muscle memory for handling the friction of real human relationships.
Because it's too easy.
Right. It creates emotional dependency on a machine that requires absolutely nothing of them.
Caitlin Regera, professor at University College London, gave a great quote in the sources about this. She said, "Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me."
That sums it up perfectly.
Yeah. Governments spent a decade playing catch up with social media harms. And now they are running the exact same playbook with untested AI products.
They are writing bans for the last decade's technology while completely ignoring the machine currently in half of teenagers' pockets.
That's so backwards.
And even when they do mention AI, they miss the ordinary everyday harms. The UK ban, for example, only restricts under 18s from romantic or sexual roleplay chatbots.
They just ignore everything else.
It completely ignores that ordinary middle. We just discussed the emotional dependency and social isolation.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Hmm.
Are governments purposefully leaving this default open?
That's the big question.
Yeah, because Sonia Livingston from the London School of Economics pointed out that the UK government was championing billions in AI investment right before unveiling this ban. So are they looking the other way because they view regulation as stifling innovation in the global AI race?
It's a highly plausible incentive structure. I mean, if a nation wants to position itself as an AI superpower, it makes strategic sense not to aggressively regulate the user base of its most promising domestic startups.
Right.
The economic imperative is overshadowing the developmental concerns.
But, you know, while national governments and global coalitions might be dragging their feet for the sake of the economy, American states aren't waiting around. They are rapidly stepping into the void to rewrite the rules themselves.
The sheer volume of state-level legislation is staggering right now. A mid-year report by researcher Scott Bobwa-Brennan counted 109 state AI laws enacted just in the first half of 2026.
109? Wow.
Yes. And the single busiest category out of all of them, companion chatbots.
Oh, really?
There have been 14 enacted laws in just 6 months, specifically targeting these conversational bots.
The bipartisanship is what really caught my eye in the report. Six states with Democratic trifectas, meaning they control the governorship and both legislative chambers, and eight states with Republican trisectas passed these laws.
Yeah, it's crossing all party lines.
You have deep blue California and New York passing laws alongside deep red Oklahoma.
They do have slightly different legislative flavors, though.
Like what?
Well, the Democratic bills tend to lean toward requiring mandatory warning labels and self-harm protocols within the chat interface, while the Republican bills strongly favor strict age verification requirements before the app can even be opened.
Okay, sure.
But fundamentally, they are all aiming at the exact same target. They are all looking at the machine built for conversation, the one that talks to teenagers when no one else is in the room, and deciding that the default setting cannot simply be unchecked access.
And the clock is ticking on two more laws as we speak.
Yes, it is.
By Wednesday, July 15th, Hawaii's SB 3001 becomes law automatically without Governor Josh Green's veto. And Missouri's SB 1019 is sitting on Governor Mike Kehoe's desk waiting for a signature or a veto.
So the landscape is changing daily.
Think about what this means for compliance. If you or your family use these apps, the protections you assume exist might completely depend on the state you live in.
Absolutely.
Like building an AI app right now is like trying to build a car where the steering wheel is perfectly legal in New York but constitutes a felony the second you drive across the border into Oklahoma.
Mm.
It is a massive state-by-state matrix.
Which is incredibly difficult for developers to navigate. But if we look across the Atlantic, there is a jurisdiction that isn't doing things piecemeal.
Right. Europe.
Yes. Europe just locked in the most fundamental default of all the absolute right to know you aren't talking to a human being.
The European Union recently passed their digital omnibus, and they actually delayed most of the hard rules in their landmark AI Act, like the heavy high-risk compliance obligations for AI companies got pushed out to 2027 and 2028.
Yes, they did.
But they kept one crucial provision right on schedule, Article 50. In exactly 22 days, on August 2nd, a chatbot operating in Europe must tell users in the very first exchange that it is an AI.
That's a huge shift.
And any deepfakes or synthetic media must be clearly marked.
This raises an important question about regulatory negotiation. Brussels essentially traded away the immediate, heavy compliance regime in order to fiercely protect the single most vital rule for conversational AI.
Yeah.
They decided transparency is the prerequisite for everything else.
It's like negotiating to delay a massive, incredibly invasive corporate tax audit, but agreeing you still have to wear a giant neon name tag that says, I am a robot right now today.
That's a great way to put it.
And we are already seeing the cost of unfinished compliance for the companies that don't want to play ball. On July 8th, XAI shipped their new model, Grok 4.5, worldwide.
Well, almost worldwide.
Right. Everywhere in the world except the European Union.
Because the AI Act still requires major systemic risk models to complete mandatory safety paperwork before launching.
And what exactly is a systemic risk model?
It's simply an AI powerful enough that a glitch or a misuse could cause widespread societal disruption. For those models, Europe requires adversarial testing.
Like red teaming.
Exactly. It essentially means hiring red teams to actively try and break the AI, to force it to do bad things, to prove it's safe before it goes public. And XAI just hadn't finished that paperwork.
And that testing is especially vital because the sources note that Grok 4.5 has double the hallucination rate of its predecessor, while sounding even more confident.
Which is a dangerous combination.
Extremely.
Yeah.
For anyone unfamiliar, the hallucination rate is how often the AI just completely makes up a fact and presents it to you as absolute truth. So Europe basically told them to finish their safety homework before shipping a confident liar to millions of people.
Exactly. We've traced this thread from the corporate level to the consumer level to teens to state and global regulations. But the biggest plot twist of the entire week.
Oh, this is my favorite part.
The entity providing the ultimate blueprint for doing defaults right is the U.S. military.
This is the part of the deep dive that really brings it all home. The Defense Health Agency just finished rolling out its clinical AI agent worldwide across military hospitals and clinics.
It's a massive deployment.
It is integrated directly into the MHS Genesis system, which is the massive electronic health record system used across the Department of Defense. It is an ambient listening tool.
Right.
It sits in the exam room, listens to the conversation between the doctor and the patient, drafts the clinical notes, handles the medical coding, and then the human doctor reviews, edits, and signs it.
Now, ambient listening in a medical setting sounds like a privacy nightmare.
It really does.
But the safeguards they built into this system are revolutionary. It requires verbal consent spoken out loud in the room before the recording even begins.
Wow.
The patient has the authority to pause it at any single moment during the exam. And a human doctor has to physically sign every single note it generates.
So it's like having an invisible, perfectly accurate scribe in the room that only picks up the pen when you look at it and say, go.
Exactly.
And the impact on the actual care is profound. Colonel Dr. Steven Edstrom, a psychiatrist, noted that mental health intakes used to require 30 to 45 minutes of typing.
That's half the appointment just typing.
Right. With the AI, that drops to 5 to 10 minutes. And the notes still capture, in his words, the meat of the appointment. And then Elthie Curl Peter Easter, a pediatrician, said that because the piping stops, doctors can actually make eye contact again. They can lean in and actually listen to the patient.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it proves that consent doesn't ruin the product.
Right.
Meta essentially argued through their actions that an opt-in default for Instagram photos would ruin the adoption of Muse Image.
Yeah, they didn't even want to ask.
Yet the U.S. military successfully built, scaled, and deployed an opt-in consent-first default for the single most sensitive rooms in medicine all over the world.
It's incredible.
It reduces administrative burden, it improves patient care, and it respects privacy. It scales beautifully.
So what does this all mean? We've covered so much ground today. From Shang Lu and Tang Tan allegedly walking out the door with Apple's hardware secrets to build an OpenAI device, to Meta trying to stealth edit your face.
We've seen a lot of bad behavior.
Yeah. We saw states rushing to protect teens from the social friction loss of chatbots. Europe demanding a neon, I am a robot sign by August 2nd. And the military proving that asking first actually works.
The machine that talks to you is getting a physical body, it's getting a workplace login, and it is taking a chair in your doctor's office. This entire week was one massive battle over whether anyone actually has to ask you first.
Yeah, that's really what it boils down to.
Meta got caught. Europe set a hard calendar date, and the military provided the blueprint for success.
It's all about that default setting, which leaves you with a brand new thought to really mull over today. If consent defaults and transparency rules are only happening geographically, like if you happen to live in Europe, or institutionally, like if you happen to be a patient in a military hospital, are we sprinting toward a two-tiered reality?
That's a very real possibility.
One where some people have the legal right to know who they are talking to and the power to say no, while the rest of us are simply treated as raw data by default.
That is the defining question we will be answering over the next decade.
It really is. Before we wrap up, we want to remind everyone listening that if you or someone you know is struggling, the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is available 24/7 by call or text in the U.S.
Please reach out if you need to.
Remember that new smartphone setup we talked about at the beginning? The next time you're clicking through those default settings, take a second. Because right now, in the world of conversational AI, the default setting isn't just about your preferences. It's about your permission. Keep questioning the defaults. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.